It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Welcome to Rico Bronya. It's a drive home edition of the Rico. The New York Mets defeat the Miami Marlins. I got my partner in crime, Spence, with me. Spence, did you enjoy the game tonight?
Yeah.
All right.
Fireworks night and the Mets
winning. That is a good answer by Spence. I'll ask him. Go ahead. What else you got? Yes, it was crazy. Here's the thing about this Met victory. And by the way, welcome to the Rico. This is our 700th edition of the Rico Bronya, and we're doing it in style with a drive home Rico as the Mets beat the Miami Marlins 9-7 on a walk-off home run by MJ Melendez on fireworks night. In case you didn't realize, I got to give the Mets a lot of credit. They have found a way. It's actually really impressive. And one of the defining things of this 2026 season is that the Mets have found a way to win games and still depress you. Like, it really is. It's an art form, I must say, because they had a four-run lead three different times. They had a two-run lead in the eighth inning. They do nothing in the ninth inning. And yet, all of that negative, Mark Vientos makes a brutal error that leads to two runs. Freddy Peralta can't go five innings. I'm going through all the negatives pretty quickly. But they did a lot of bad stuff in this game. But they won. And so at the end of the day, you're certainly happy that they won. Every game is important when you're, you know, nine games under 500 and you've created this massive hole that you're in. So, as I've said many times on the Rico this season, beggars can't be choosers. I'm thrilled that they won, but they did a lot of bad things. They did a lot of very discouraging things. What'd they do, Spence? I'll tell you what they did. Their defense, specifically Mark Vientos not playing a ball that was hit right at him, was a bad thing. They give their ace, quote-unquote ace, Freddy Peralta, a big lead. They score from four runs in the first inning. He retires the first six guys he faces. It looks like Freddy's going to cruise, and this is going to be a nice, easy victory. The Mets can save their bullpen. A nice, stressless night at Citi Field. And Freddy Peralta, the supposed ace of this team, here's the phrase I'll use for you, Spence. You ready? He crapped the bed. You know what that means? If you don't know what that means, well, you don't do it anymore, which is a good job by you, but it's like you're in bed, and in the middle of the night, you poop yourself.
I never did that.
I know you didn't do it. You don't do that anymore. Freddy Peralta, and this is like not literal because he didn't actually poop himself while pitching, but that did not happen. But how do I say it? Like he sort of pooped himself. That's how I would say. He pitched as if he pooped himself. Because when you give an ace a four-run lead, when you give an ace numerous four-run leads, can you get through five? And while he was about to get through five, if it wasn't for that misplay by Mark Vientos, I acknowledge that Vientos' defense cost him, sure. He also labored. It was laborious in the third inning. It was laborious in the fourth inning. He was actually bailed out in the fourth inning by good defense when Luis Torrens, who continues to do a really good job of shutting down run games, had a caught stealing. So this was bad by Freddy Peralta. And it's one of those bads that throughout the game, like I was dumbly, I guess is the word, I never really thought they were going to blow the game until they blew the game, which I'll get to in a few minutes. But when Freddy Peralta was laboring through the third inning and through the fourth inning and couldn't get through the fifth inning, the biggest negative was how it was going to affect Saturday and Sunday and Monday and Tuesday, right? The Mets play six consecutive days. They just had an off day, so the bullpen has been sort of refreshed, though not Devin Williams. And when you have a lead like this and you have a game with your ace on the mound, it's not just, hey, that's a win. That should be money in the bank. It's you've got a chance to save your bullpen. The Mets have had games this season. We've seen it where they've got to use all of their bullpen to secure a win. And the problem with that is while you're great and you're happy that you got a win and the bullpen for the most part does a good job, you hinder yourself for the next few days. You hinder the following day. you hinder potentially the day after that. And it becomes something that doesn't just impact one day, it impacts multiple days. So I'll be perfectly honest with you, as Peralta was laboring and couldn't get through the fifth inning, I wasn't, my number one concern, believe it or not, this is dumb, wasn't the game, because I actually had a level of confidence that they were going to win said game. It was more, what the hell is tomorrow going to look like? What is Sunday going to look like? And these are games where that shouldn't be the case. If Freddie Peralta goes six innings and allows one run, like a true ace, or something closer to an ace than 4 2/3 innings, four runs to earn, then you're not going to have to use the bulk of your bullpen. You're not going to have to ask A.J. Minter and Brooks Raley and Waskar Brazoban and Luke Weaver, basically all of your top relievers, to go out and get big outs. And so I know they won, and they won on a walk-off, and this should be a happy edition, the 700th edition of the Rico. But like I said at the top, what the Mets have done just incredibly well this season is when they win games, they still bother you. When they win games, they still kind of anger you. And that's kind of what this game was. So I started with Freddie Peralta. I mentioned Mark Vientos' bad defense. I should mention that they scored runs, and that was cool. A.J. Ewing in the first inning, behind in the count. We complain so much when Met pitching allows ahead-of-the-count base hits, especially big ones that drive in runs. Well, as annoying as that is, it is satisfying to see your young player, your guys come through when they're behind in the count. So that was a great job by A.J. Ewing. Brett Beatty also came through with a big base hit. And so we saw the Mets deliver clutch hits. And that was nice, especially from the young player in A.J. Ewing and the guy that we're still holding out weird hope for in Brett Beatty. We also saw Mark Vientos hit an absolute bomb. Now, I will admit, when I take my youngin to the game, one of the things Spence loves to do is Kitty Field. So we were walking back from Kitty Field when Mark Vientos hit that bomb, but I saw it on the TV. And so that's a part of what I love about Citi Field. I was thinking about this as I was at the game, because before the game, before the Mets take the field, they play a video. And that video is about the history of the Mets, like a quick video synopsing our wonderful history. Yes? Back to Shea Stadium. I don't know if you heard Spence say that, but he heard back to Shea Stadium. And so I explained to him what Shea Stadium was and how much Shea Stadium means to me, how much it means to his grandpa, how much it means to a lot of people in the Rico audience. And we love Shea Stadium. But on nights where I take my kid and we enjoy Kitty Field, I think to myself, you couldn't do that at Shea Stadium. Like, there was no Kitty Field at Shea Stadium. And not only that, when you get up at Citi Field to get ice cream or hot dogs or do all the things that you do to keep your kids happy through a three-hour baseball game, there were TVs everywhere. So when I tell you, yeah, the good news is I saw the Mark Vientos home run, even though I wasn't, like, really seeing it. I saw it on a TV screen. And you wouldn't have seen that at Shea Stadium. So as much as I miss our old dump and flushing, known as Shea Stadium. Yes, there are even TVs in the bathroom. You are right. And they didn't have that at Shea Stadium. I don't even want to tell you, Spence, what was in the bathroom at Shea Stadium. It didn't smell good, okay? I'll leave it at that. But back to the positives. Mark Vientos hit a bomb, and that was great to see. It wasn't all good for Mark Vientos because he had a few other opportunities with guys on base, and I mentioned the miscue that he made. And what's funny about the miscue is, and obviously this is a drive-home Rico, so I don't have the scorecard in front of me to make sure everything is 1,000% accurate, but I think it was right before the error that he made. He made a play, a ground ball towards first base, in which Freddie Peralta had to dart over and cover first, which he did. And Vientos made a perfect play. And I know that's the spring training play, but it's also the play that still haunts us because Pete had so much trouble with it. Kodai Senga got hurt off of it, and who knows about Kodai Senga's career at this point. And certainly you look back at the Alonzo Senga moment as a pivotal moment, unfortunately, in the history of this franchise. So any time now, this is a positive. Any time the play is made successfully, it's almost like a breath of fresh air. And to Vientos' credit, he made that play perfectly. And then right after, that's when he's, you know, booting one, which was a significant error because it not only got Freddie Peralta essentially out of the game, but it allowed two more unearned runs to score. But I did like to see the Mets taking advantage of the Marlins' miscues. So as bad as the Met defense was, you had the tack-on run that they got on the base hit by Marcus Semien, in which the left fielder Kyle Stowers booted it. And then on a bunt play by Luis Torrens, the throw goes to third base right after Torrens is tagged out. The throw is wild, and the Mets were handed a run. So I don't want to not acknowledge the fact that while the Met defense allowed Miami to score multiple runs, the Marlins defense did the same for the Mets. So the positive from this game was the offense. The negative, and I don't want to kill him too much because Juan Soto is our best hitter and we need him. But when he came up in the 10th inning, I was stupefied that Clayton McCullough didn't walk him. So obviously Austin Warren does a great job in the top of the 10th inning. Big strikeout, ground out, pop up, gets through the 10th inning without allowing the Manfred man to score, which puts you in a great spot in the bottom of the 10th inning when you know, hey, I can just play a little ball. I can advance the runner. I can win the game that way. So when Warren gets through the inning, and good touch by Citi Field, I never noticed this. They've probably been doing it for a while, and maybe I just didn't pick up on it. But when Austin Warren strikes a guy out, they break the glass and play Stone Cold's music. So I appreciate that. Good job by the New York Mets. But in the bottom of the 10th inning, you got Bo Bichette on second base, and you have Juan Soto up. And I'm playing along in that half-inning break, thinking they're going to walk Soto. Melendez is going to come up. You could bunt with Melendez if you so choose. They could then potentially walk A.J. Ewing, and we could be looking at bases loaded one out for Mark Vientos, which is a dangerous spot because Vientos is such a prime double play candidate. But I went in to the bottom of the 10th inning, almost preparing myself mentally that it's going to be bases loaded one out for Mark Vientos. I took the leap of faith that McCullough was going to walk Soto. I took the leap of faith that MJ Melendez was going to successfully get down a bunt. And then I took for granted that A.J. Ewing would be intentionally walked by Fairbanks and it would set up Vientos with the bases loaded. When they faced Juan Soto in the bottom of the 10th inning, I was stunned. I really couldn't believe it. And I thought it created an opportunity for Soto. Juan Soto, and I think this is a fair way to define his tenure so far. We're almost a year and a half in. He's a great player. We all know he's a great player. He also made a nice leaping catch in this game. He is a tremendous offensive player. He has a wonderful eye. He hits for great power. He's hitting for average this season. We know how valuable Juan Soto is. Spence, did you fall asleep? Okay, no, I was just checking. If you fell asleep, that's all right. It's totally okay. We are now on the bridge. What bridge is this? The Whitestone Bridge. Anyhow, Soto's lacked the big moment. Like, as great of a player as he is, it feels like while there's been some clutch moments, I'm not saying it's all been tack-on BS runs. Obviously, that's not true, but he hasn't had a lot of big moments. And once McCullough decided, hey, I'm going to let Pete Fairbanks face him, it was a great chance for Soto to have a big moment, for him to rip a double up the alley and end the game, for him to hit a two-run bomb. And he comes up and he pops up. And it's disappointing. And if the Mets are going to go on any kind of run, not that any of us expect that, they're going to need moments from Juan Soto. Not a moment, they're going to need a lot of them. And so it was a missed opportunity. It was disappointing. And once Soto makes out, doesn't even advance the runner on that fly ball to center field, obviously, now you're starting to think, are they really not going to score here? Are they really going to move it to the top of the 11th inning and ask Austin Warren again to get through the runner on second, nobody out spot? And then, by the way, it's going to be the bottom of the order for the Mets and the bottom of the 11th inning. Is that really what we're looking at? But credit to MJ Melendez. Look, MJ Melendez got off to a great start when he first got here. They couldn't get him out. I think he was about to lose his job. I thought he was about to be sent down and then was given the break when Tyrone Taylor got hurt and he is stuck around. Nick Morabito goes down. Here comes Eric Wagaman. And so MJ Melendez, despite sinking like a stone, I thought was given kind of another chance. And to his credit, that was a big hit because with a runner on second and one out, you're no longer in that position where contact's going to help you, where moving the runner along is going to help you. Now you need a big hit. Now you need someone to come up and rip a base hit or rip one up the alley or do something. And right off the bat, you kind of knew it was either going to be a foul ball, a deep foul ball, or it was going to be a home run. And it was a very exciting moment. Most exciting moment of the game is me and Spencer watching that baseball go down the right field line, hoping it stays fair. And a great moment for MJ Melendez. And a sigh of relief for us, because in a season that has been loaded with brutal losses, this was going to be up there. Now, I guess at some point, and maybe this is a discussion for the depressing offseason, which could be a very long offseason based on some of the proposals that were made in the MLB player and owner negotiations, at some point, the bad losses become just, they suck, who cares? I don't think we're there yet. We haven't hit June 1st. As much as I may not believe in the team or you may not believe in the team, there is still a chance, even if it's small. But they may play a game in August or September in which they're 30 games out and they're going to blow a five-run lead. And when we talk about it as a best loss during the offseason, the debate's going to be, did it even matter? And look, I get that there are people right now, I said this on the last Rico, who have checked out. They're not even watching games. And maybe they're checking out the Rico just to hear quick recaps or what have you. So I know that less people are consuming the Mets today than 3 weeks ago or a month ago. But for me, as long as they're still alive, and as much as I don't believe in the team, they are alive, this would have been a bad loss. They had three different four-run leads. They had a two-run lead in the eighth inning. This would have been a bad loss. Now, Hoff, and great job by Pete Hoffman. Pete Hoffman does an overnight show Friday into Saturday. He naps for an extended period of time. And I'll take you behind the scenes. I had to call in a favor. I'm not going over the speed limit. Anyhow, I had to call in a favor at WFAN and say, hey, can you wake up Pete Hoffman because the game is over. We need to do a Rico. And Hoff popped right up out of the bed, out of the couch, and he got the Rico going. I ask you this question because I will have an ability to hear you. I have assumptions on Devin Williams's lack of availability. My assumption is the workload from 2 days ago. But is that what it is, Hoff, or is there anything more serious about Devin Williams, potentially an injury that maybe we didn't notice? Because my speculation, first, I didn't know it was Devin. It could have been Luke Weaver, who went an inning and a third a day earlier. But the way the bullpen was handled, specifically Tobias Myers coming into a two-run game in the eighth inning, screamed as if someone's not available, whether it's Weaver or Devin Williams. So I'm going to assume Devin's okay, and it was just workload from 2 days ago. But is there any other update on Devin Williams, Pete Hoffman? All right. I don't hear you, which means probably you fell asleep again, and that's okay. But I will just assume, because obviously drive home, Rico, I'm not listening to what the manager said. But yeah, I think all of our reactions to Tobias Myers coming into a two-run game in the eighth inning was the same, which was, what the hell is this? Look, the Mets have good arms in their bullpen. If there's one minor compliment one could pay the man from Milwaukee, it would be, it's not a terrible bullpen. Obviously, the Edwin Diaz decision so far has looked great. Devin Williams has been better despite some hiccups. Luke Weaver has been better. Brooks Raley has 98% of the time been awesome. Waskar Brazoban has been awesome. And obviously, we'll see about A.J. Minter, assuming he can stay healthy. But you look at the bullpen usage today, it shows you how deep this bullpen could be in the fact that A.J. Minter came into a game in the fifth inning. That's the potential of what this pen can be. Obviously, Minter is still kind of pitching his way back into a role, but he comes in and does a great job, including making that awesome defensive play on the comebacker where he stuck his glove behind him and made that play. But I thought Mendy, from the Minter decision, because I thought Peralta, sure, take him out. I know he's probably pissed off he didn't get a chance to win, but give me a break. You threw a million pitches. You couldn't get through the fifth inning. I know Vientos didn't help you. I'm done. I don't give a damn about you trying to get a win. But he goes to Minter mid-inning. He gets the three outs. He goes to Brazoban, who was not as sharp as he normally is. Walked a guy, gave up a hit, gave up a run. But he uses Brazoban in the right moment. Goes to Brooks Raley, who faces one batter and gets a strikeout. So the Myers decision. It obviously stems from Devin's unavailability. The one, I guess, critique I'd have is, could you have extended Brooks Raley? Now, I guess the negative about extending Raley from one batter to possibly getting three more outs is that that knocks him out of Saturday's game. And unfortunately, you're thinking about that. You know, we've talked about that a lot, that as a manager of the team, you can't just think about one day, as much as every win is so important. So that would be my only like first-ish guess? Because obviously in the moment, I don't know, Weaver and Devin aren't available. When you see Myers warming up, or I didn't know which one wasn't available. I wasn't sure. Once I saw Weaver warming up, obviously you knew Luke was available. It wasn't going to be Devin. But they asked Tobias Myers to do some big boy stuff, and he failed. And it was crazy because in that inning, the first batter swung at the first pitch, got a base hit. The second batter popped up to shortstop, but it was one of those swings that for a split second, I thought, uh-oh. And luckily, it turned out to be like a measly pop-up to shortstop. And then the third pitch to Owen Casey was the two-run home run. And then the fourth pitch was the second out. How often have you ever seen that, where a pitcher, a new pitcher coming into a game, those four pitches, the four straight hitters swing at the first pitch, and there's a result on every one of them? A single, a pop-up, a home run, and an out. It was kind of nuts. So I guess the book was out on Tobias Myers, which was attack early. And let's face it, Myers got off to a great start. The bloom has come off the rose of one Tobias Myers. But as much as that sucked, and as much as blowing the lead sucked, Luke Weaver did his job in the ninth. Obviously, Austin Warren did another marvelous job in the 10th. And the Met offense was able to scratch out the two runs on the two-run home run by MJ Melendez. And hey, we got a winning streak, two in a row. Obviously, they need more. They need more. And Saturday is going to be tough because now they need innings. You know, when you look at the way they had to use their bullpen in this game, and even though a lot of the guys who pitched in this game could pitch on Saturday, if they pitch on Saturday, they're not available Sunday. So I think when you look at Scott and you look at McLean on Saturday and Sunday, the Mets are going to need innings. And that's kind of the fallout of Freddie's failure in this game. Because he didn't go deep in the game, because he got knocked out before the fifth inning, and you had to use so much of your bullpen, and the game went 10 innings, you had all that together. You're asking more from Christian Scott, and you're asking more from Nolan McLean. And obviously with Nolan, it's a big bounce-back start considering how badly and how poorly he's pitched. A couple of other thoughts. I'm not into fireworks anymore. I guess as a 40-plus-year-old man, I moved on from it. But I do remember as a kid, fireworks night was such a big deal. And for a long time, they would only have one fireworks night per year. I like the fact that they basically do it every Friday night. I like that. You notice that less people stay for the entire show than back in the day, mainly because back in the day, it was such a special event. But I think having two kids and two boys who still love the fireworks, I'm glad they do it. And they had a big crowd. And I'm not sure how much of it was for fireworks. Maybe it was for the Bobby Valentine disguise that they gave away, which I thought was badass. But I like that they do a lot of firework nights. And the Bobby Valentine disguise giveaway, kudos to the New York Mets. Now, I am confused about something. Guys. Are you all right, Spence? Yes. What? Don't worry about the guy with the mask. Yeah, it's Bobby Valentine, and I told Spence the story about Bobby Valentine, which was fun to tell him, which is that he got thrown out of a game and had to wear a mustache and glasses, right?
See, I don't want to end up in the show.
Yes?
The Valley,
yes?
I don't
know where that person is. Okay, you got it, buddy. The one thing Spence and I could not figure out about the Bobby Valentine giveaway, which was sunglasses and a fake mustache, is how to get the mustache to stick under your nose. I couldn't figure it out. I saw other people doing it. Spence suggested I ask the security guard how you put the mustache on. I didn't do that because I figured the security guard had no idea. But for anybody who went to Bobby Valentine Mustache Night with the sunglasses, please let us know because we have a second set of Bobby Valentine mustache and glasses, and we could try to do that on Saturday as we watch the game. But I was thinking, A, I can't believe it's been that long. Like, I think it's unbelievable that it has been how many years since the Bobby Valentine incident? I guess 25 years now, 26 years. What year? Was it 99 or 2000? I sometimes get those two seasons in terms of specific regular season games, certainly not the playoffs, a little bit confused. But I think it was 99, but one of those two magical years in Met history where Bobby got ejected from a game against the Blue Jays. I'm pretty sure it was 99 because I think it was when they were in that funk and they were breaking out of it after they fired the coaches against the Yankees. But Bobby gets ejected, comes back, extra inning game, much like the game we just had, and wears the disguise. One of the comedic moments in Met history. So I love the fact that they celebrated it. Obviously, Bobby Valentine is getting into the Mets Hall of Fame on Saturday, which is very well deserved. I'd be curious to see the crowd on Saturday. Hopefully it's packed. Hopefully people are there for his speeches, because I'll say this about Bobby, and he was a controversial figure. I think for me, in my lifetime, and I don't really remember Davey Johnson, because I remember Davey getting fired. Like I do. I remember being told that, learning about that, and I was very young. I was basically Spence's age when they did that. So my first manager of memory that I watched was Buddy Harrelson. What was that, Spence? Oh, no, you're not young. You're old. I'm sorry. I apologize. You're 5 and a half. I was saying I was 5 and a half around that time when Davey Johnson got fired. He was the manager back in the late 80s, the last Met manager to win a World Series. So I don't remember Davey in terms of watching him manage, but I remember everybody else. Bobby Valentine, Jeff Torberg, Bud Harrelson, Art Howe, Jerry Manuel, Dallas Green. We can go through the list. For my money, and this is with all due respect to everybody else that you want to give kudos to, Terry Collins did a fine job, led us to the World Series. The best Met manager in my lifetime was Bobby Valentine. I trusted him. It would have been fun doing Rico's or even being on WFAN when Bobby managed, because not that I didn't criticize him, I think we all did, but there was a level of trust I had in his baseball acumen and his decision-making that has not been matched by any manager this franchise has had. We've had good managers, don't get me wrong. We've had some bad ones, but I thought Bobby was the best. So it is a very well-deserved honor that he is going into the Mets Hall of Fame. And I thought it was really cool that the Mets gave away this mustache and sunglasses to honor him. Now, Spence, you're going to have to scream really loudly. Any other thoughts on the Met game with your dad tonight? Yeah. Oh, you know what Spence didn't like? And this is for all you people out there. We're at a Met game, okay? We're at a Mets game. I don't need to hear you tell me, let's go Knicks. I don't need to hear Jalen Brunson chants.
I don't need to hear.
I agree.
Let's go Yankee chants.
Well, we didn't hear any let's go Yankee chants. We heard let's go Knicks chants.
Yeah.
And I commend Spence because he went to a few of those people and said, boo Knicks. So that was a good job by you. Look. I get it. If you're a diehard fan, congratulations. You're in the NBA Finals. God bless you. I'd be pumped up too. I mean, you can only imagine my world if I was watching the Brooklyn Nets in the NBA Finals. I can't even say that with a straight face. But this is our getaway. I'm at Citi Field to forget about my troubles, which is the New York Knicks being 4 wins away from an NBA championship. So spare me. Anyhow, we appreciate you downloading and listening to this 700th edition of the Rico Bronya. Remember, subscribe to the Rico. You'll never miss an episode. We'll have our series recap Rico Bronya on Sunday. Make sure you subscribe to the WFAN YouTube page. Spence, what do those YouTubers say about what you should do to a YouTube page? Like, what do they say?
Comment.
Comment? Yeah. Subscribe. And like the video. Okay. Comment, like, and subscribe to the video or whatever. Thank you for listening. Okay. All right. You got it, pal. Can you give us a big let's go, Mets?
Let's go, Mets.
Can you give us a boo, Knicks?
Boo, Knicks.
Thank you for listening to the 700th edition of Drive Home of the Rico Bronya. Let's go, Mets!
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.